police complaint.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody should be treated like that. Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
By anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And if it were anyone but the police, it would be obvious that that was illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But the police get away with it every day, partly because they're undertrained.
Mm-hmm.
And partly because they don't understand why they wield the power they do.
Mm-hmm.
But there should be, you know, if two or three people came in complaining about the same general behavior, things like not giving your badge numbers, never mind the blatant violence, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one thing after another that that father described, that if it's half true, it needs to become an issue in this community. And it would not only help this new police review board understand why they have an important function when they get it, but it could begin the workings of getting these guys trained.
Mm-hmm.
So I encourage the father himself to try to write a letter. And I want to share a strategy that I use. I don't know if it's any good, but I usually write first to the city council, then to the civilian police review board, or citizen police review board, then to the police chief.
Mm-hmm.
And that way maybe I get an answer other than the little form letter.
Hmm.
I've had to deal with him when my son was a teenager. He's moved now to Capitola. He thinks he's safer there. We'll see.
All right. Well, these are all good ideas, and I encourage Tom to also call Nick. And I think there are other people who could be helpful in this case, although, of course, I can't volunteer their services. Margaret Marr and others were...
I would recommend calling Jane Looney.
Jane Looney?
Margaret and Jane are both part of the... Citizens to create a police review board.
Citizens Commission for a Civilian Police Review Board, yeah.
And they're still working to make sure that they become citizens watchdogging this.
Do you have their number?
No, I just looked for it, but I couldn't find it. But Jane Looney is listed.
Right. Well, I guess Nick Whitehead probably has their number. He's also part of the Civilian Police Review, the Commission to Create a Civilian Police Review Board.
And again, I want to emphasize that it came up indirectly as that father was talking, but I want to emphasize, along with your little scenario of a cop watch,
mm-hmm.
get their police badge numbers or ask them their names.
Mm-hmm.
Ignore whatever attitude problems they might have. And as you were saying, don't get in the way, because then you could end up the one with your face being smashed against the outside.
Yeah, if you happen to have a tape recorder or a camera, well, you're all set.
Cameras are good, but get their badge numbers or their names. They're breaking the law if their number isn't available to you.
Yeah. So, yeah, it sounds like a nighttime witch hunt there, or, you know, like one of the old lynching parties.
It is the way brown youth are treated in our community, and they get away with it. It needs to come to light.
It's time for a change.
Time for music.
Want a song?
Do I want a song?
Would you guys like a verse from Linda?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Linda.
All right. The banks are made of marble, with a guard at every door. And the vaults are lined with silver that the people suffered for.
I heard that one. That's an old Pete Seeger verse.
Yeah, Pete Seeger taught that to me. Thanks to you dragging me to Monterey one time long ago.
Yeah, well, there you are. You see, now you have something else to blame me for.
Okay.
Well, look, let me let you go here, because I have, I think, Red Top Robert Flory may soon be calling in.
I'd like to hear from Mr. Flory.
Indeed it would. So I encourage Red Top, if he's listening, to give us a call.
So, yes, that was Lighthouse Linda, and I'm hoping now to get a call, as I said, from Red Top Robert Flory, a local community activist who has been, that's a simulation of a police siren by our very own musical instrument, the...
up against the wall.
The living...
I got you.
You can't turn this guy off. We can kick him out, but you can't lock him out. I guess that's the problem here. I was describing the Santa Cruz Sentinel of July 20th. Wonton Dave Jacobs is another local activist, a friend of Robert Flory's, who's been fighting City Hall and unjust laws here locally for about half a decade. He has won, I guess it's 15 or 16 out of 16 misdemeanor cases in which the city has attempted to harass him for sitting on the sidewalk, essentially being public. Being present in a public place as a homeless person. You may have seen him downtown. He used to wear a colorful bathrobe. He's a big, he's an older guy, a veteran, who's a colorful local guy who probably knows a lot more about the a law regarding the rights of homeless people on the streets than most of us do, even most attorneys and public defenders.
Wow.
There's a story in the community notebook from the Santa Cruz Sentinel, which I'm going to read aloud, and I'm hoping that Robert Flory, who has also been in the courts a lot, will give us some descriptions as to why that story is inaccurate, what needs to be added to it, and what the real issues are. Court rebuffs activist. Homeless activist Dave Wonton Jacobs has lost a lawsuit in which he claimed the courts could not force him to perform community service in lieu of paying fines. Jacobs, 43, has collected more than 70 citations over the past several years, many of them for violations of the Santa Cruz camping ban. He had appealed a Santa Cruz County Municipal Court ruling that held him in contempt of court for refusing community service. Jacobs maintained the court-imposed community service was involuntary service that could not be imposed for infractions. The 6th Appellate District Court disagreed. Because Jacobs was indigent and unable to pay the fines, the court properly modified its sentence to allow him to perform community service according to the court ruling. To reward Jacobs' attempt to use his claim of indigence as a shield of special protection to avoid being subject to the law he has violated, it would deny other persons who violate the same infraction, the equal protection of the law, Jacobs claims, is his right, the court said. The appellate court upheld the contempt ruling and ordered that Jacobs serve 2 days in county jail for each of the 3 infractions. And this was in the Santa Cruz Sentinel of Thursday, July 20th. And the issue here, as I see it, has not been well framed. It makes it look like Jacobs is trying to get a free ride at everybody else's expense. It's not, in fact, the case. Reality, what's happening is that Jacobs, in the first instance, is being harassed. The laws which he's being charged with are incidentally being used to go after him because the police don't like the way he looks on the street or at a public protest. For instance, this was done to him and to Robert Flory when they did a peace vigil in front of what is now, I guess, it's across from the old Cooper House, which is now a vacant lot. They did this peace vigil about a year and a half ago around Valentine's Day in 1994, right before the downtown ordinances were passed. And at this vigil, some of them sat down on the sidewalk by the side of the fence, which is now a building, but was then just a fence in front of another open hole. The police arrested them for sitting down on the sidewalk, even though there was no law that prohibited sitting down on the sidewalk. As you can see by the Metro Santa Cruz story on the two youths who were convicted in Mulligan's court, it doesn't take much for these judges to convict you even when there isn't any evidence. Unfortunately, this is true. It seems to be increasingly true. Often, particularly if you're not having a jury trial. If you have a trial in front of a judge, you are really risking your shirt. Those are some of the considerations about the Jacobs case, and I'm hoping that we now have more considerations you'll be able to hear from Red Tub Robert, who may be the incoming caller.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I just need to speak to Nick a minute. And so
this is another person. You have to talk to him after the show, Charlie.
Okay, would you give me his number?
It's 475-2012.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
So again, we're talking about the Jacobs case. Jacobs was using a variation of what we call the Edwards-Flory defense in court. And the Edwards-Flory defense is named after Linda Edwards and, in fact, Robert Flory, who first used that defense that I'd ever heard of, its first use in court. And the defense is this. If you're charged with an infraction, which is a minor crime, particularly a non-vehicular infraction, an infraction that doesn't involve a car, and you go into court and you're found guilty, you're then usually given the choice of either paying a fine or taking community service. What Jacobs did and what Flory and Edwards also did was they both refused to take a fine and they refused to do community service. And their rationale was not that they should be held innocent or simply ignored or let off the hook, but that there was a third alternative open to the courts. And that alternative was a civil fine and lien on their property and on their earnings, which is customarily what is done in a civil case when you're found liable for a certain amount. So, runs the argument that they had, you cannot put us in jail, you cannot fine us, and you cannot make us do community service, but you can confiscate what we have, and you can confiscate our earnings with a court judgment against us, if you want. Instead, what the judges tried to do, one judge particularly, a woman named Heather Morse, or Mockery Morse, as I call her, because she makes a mockery of justice, she found Florey in contempt of court and put him in jail. She found him in contempt without even a hearing, without an attorney present, and without notice that he had time to, which he had time to assemble a defense. As a consequence, he got a writ of habeas corpus, and her action was found unconstitutional by a higher judge. So frequently when this defense came up, and it didn't come up that frequently, but when it did come up, the judges found that they would rather set the case aside than risk being slapped down by a higher court. That is to say, a judge, if you refuse to pay a fine or do community service on a non-vehicular infraction, they wouldn't attempt to get, do it. They would wait until they'd say, okay, if the city attorney or the district attorney wishes to try to make a civil lien on the property of the people that are refusing to pay the fine and refusing to do the community service, they can. But otherwise, we're not taking this any further. And that happened a number of times in court to Linda Edwards and to Robert Florey. And Dave Jacobs had a similar argument that he presented on three infraction sleeping ban tickets, or camping ban tickets as they're called. He made the additional argument that the infraction itself is not a crime, that you cannot, that an infraction cannot be considered a crime. And his argument revolved around similar arguments as those used by Robert Florey and Linda Edwards, and that was that the state of California created the category of infraction to describe the lowest kind of crime, by which I mean the most trivial kind of crime, in which you could not have a public defender appointed, as in other crimes, and you could not demand a jury trial, only a trial before a judge, but in return for which you could not be found guilty of something and put in jail. You could only be put in this position where you had a liability, you had a fine you had to pay, and then they also initiated a possible community service. So, because you were giving up your right to trial, and you were giving up your right to a public defender, therefore the state was giving up its right to put you in jail. And what courts have been doing locally, some courts, and this court in the Jacobs case was doing, was it was threatening Jacobs with jail if he didn't pay the fine, even though he had no opportunity to have a jury trial and no opportunity to have a court-appointed attorney, and he was in fact simply charged with an infraction crime. So he lost his case in terms of the general claim that he made that infractions are not crimes. But it's unclear from the story both that the state had another alternative, namely confiscating his property, and it's also not clear exactly what his arguments were in this case and how they differed from Robert Florey and Linda Edwards' arguments. It's a very important court argument for those people who are faced with a camping ban or sleeping ban prosecution, because since the High Court of California has held that it's okay for the authorities to criminalize sleeping, even if there are no legal places to sleep, and that unfortunately was the High Court holding in the Tobe case about 3 or 4 months ago, then it becomes important for people who are found guilty of sleeping outside to have an alternative. And thus far in our courts, the alternative has been for those brave enough, dedicated enough, patient enough, and long-suffering enough to follow it, is to go to court, go through the trial, and then when found guilty to say, that's fine, I won't pay the fine, I won't do community service, and you cannot sentence me to jail. Confiscate my sleeping bag if you want. Take my toothbrush. Go after my clothes and whatever small, meager properties I may own. But if you want to spend your time and money doing that, and the city's time and money, and the state's time and money, that's fine. But you cannot put me in jail. And thus far, no one who's used that defense has gone to jail and stayed there. Actually, what the courts tend to do in these cases is they give you time served. Police will pick you up on a warrant, you go to jail for a day, and then when you're found guilty, the the court will say time served. Though in the court of Meat Grinder Mulligan, the mad dog of the traffic court, often he will only give you a smaller credit for that amount of time, and it, he seems to have a particular interest in squeezing what he can out of everyone who comes into his court. Of course, I suppose that's the job of the judge, just like the job of the cop. They all have their quotas to make. Well, our time is running out here. I'm going to try to get Red Top Robert on the line for his analysis of the Jacobs case, since we've been unable to reach him, to have him call in. We were able to call him before. Perhaps we can reach him now, see what he may have to contribute to this discussion. I remind you, you are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 427-3772. Hello. And who do I have here?
Robert.
Who's speaking?
Robert Flory.
Red Top Robert Flory?
Yep.
You've been listening to our discussion on the air?
Yep.
You have. What do you have to say?
Nope.
I'm afraid we've reached the famous impersonator again, eh? You don't have a Robert Flory around, do you?
Robert Flory here?
Almost. Getting better.
You did a pretty good job, Robert. I'm not really prepared to talk on the radio.
I see. So we are, in fact, talking to Robert, but you don't have too much to add?
Yeah, it's important that infraction law is seen as a huge hole in constitutional rights because it denies you due process rights, and it's important for people who are going to court on infractions, which are a pretty common way of harassing poor people and youth, is through infractions that... people would resist the courts taking away their rights. So, but you did a really good job of explaining it, I think.
Well, you have a court date coming up, don't you?
Yeah, both Juan and Dave and I are in court on September 29th in both Martin and Addicks court rooms because we've both been held in contempt by Barton, and we're both refusing to do community service hours in Addicks court, where we were found guilty of having an object on the sidewalk after dark.
You had an object on the sidewalk. That was, in fact, the notorious July 4th rally, was it not, in which you set up a small Declaration of Independence Day demonstration?
Yeah, there were a series of 1 and 2 week long peace vigils in 1994 and 1995.
Mm-hmm.
And the last one of these began July 4th, but the City Council had enacted a series of new ordinances. Among them, the tougher panhandling ordinances, a modification of the sleeping ban, making a campsite a public nuisance, the sitting laws, and also this law making it unlawful to place an object on the sidewalk after dark. And so our peace vigil was taken away, and we retired.
And you retired.
But we're still in court.
So I understand that yeah, you gave a description of this case on the air before. Getting a little echo feedback here, in which you talked about in detail Jacob's trial around this issue and your trial, in which Attic essentially ignored certain constitutional arguments. I've had similar problems with Attic in a camping case in which he ignored the fact that the most recent camping case I'm aware of, he ignored the fact that the arresting officer said he wasn't sure that we were covered up with blankets or asleep, indicating obvious reasonable doubt. But nonetheless, away he went. I wonder if you've heard anything about the case of the fellow who recently got involved in the parole system. I think it's called Mike the Wonder Dog.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. He's a pretty prominent figure.
Local Food Not Bombs person.
I'm not sure exactly what happened to him. I heard, he was charged with something. I guess he took some t-shirts and sold them, and so he was charged with dealing in illegal property or something.
Yeah, he was charged with a number of different things at different times, but the interest in his case came from the fact that he originally got into trouble because he stayed in an abandoned building and was charged with trespass in order to avoid the camping ban, which made it illegal to sleep outside. Ironically, he couldn't be charged under the camping ban because he was inside a domicile. He could just be charged with trespass. So,
yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe we'll contact him for the next show.
He was charged with a lot of stuff.
Have you had anything you want to add based on your experiences downtown in terms of how the downtown ordinances are being enforced, or anything around the courts that's coming up of any note?
I'm sure there is something. You were talking about that article in Metro Santa Cruz where some young people downtown were ticketed at Bugaboo Sports. There's an article about that in Metro Santa Cruz, and that's pretty typical. Welcome to Santa Cruz.
Go to sleep, go to jail?
Yeah, sitting in an alcove.
Go to jail? Well, did you see there being any broad response to this kind of abusive behavior against a whole class of people? There is some interest, as I was saying, in mediating this matter. The downtown mediators who are supposed to be bringing up these issues and shuttling between the merchants and the rest of us, will be meeting at 10 o'clock on Thursday at the library. And I did speak to the head of the Downtown Association, Linda, I think her name is. It's not the Linda who appeared on the show today, Linda Steinau or some such thing. She said, of course, the merchants would never abandon the downtown ordinances because they felt they were vital to the safety and well-being of the downtown. But I'm thinking that, I was saying earlier that if they continue to harass people, as I've seen them harass them, they may stir up a sufficient sentiment for a rekindling of the spirit of protest downtown. What do you think?
I agree.
Indeed. Well, I guess the last question I have for you on the Jacobs case, and Dave Jacobs, I understand, is still out of town. I haven't seen him around. Does this case have any difference from your case and that of Linda Edwards in the defense that was used?
Two separate cases.
My, your voice changes every day. Uh-huh. Well, listen, I want to thank you for being on the air, both of you, and I hope that you'll keep us apprised of not only all the latest developments, but all the latest voices out there, whoever they may be.
Well, thank you, Robert, for having your show on. I'm pretty jaded and cynical right now about whether anything is going in a good direction, so...
That sounds, I can understand that. And I thank you, and stay tuned.
All right, have a good show.
Thank you.
And that was Red Top Robert, and of course in the background, the notorious impersonator. All here for your education, edification, and amusement. I'm Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris. This is the end of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. You are listening to Radio Free Santa Cruz, Free Radio Santa Cruz, anyway, one of those, at 89.3 FM. Coming up next is apparently nothing, so you'll be able to investigate the nature of nothing as it proceeds. Actually, we'll probably put on something interesting like a tape that may educate you in the years ahead. I encourage you to give a call to Stop Police Abuse Now if you have incidents of police misconduct to report, or questions about how to get more involved in this issue. That's 475-2012. Also, for issues of homelessness and homeless rights, give a call to me at HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF or 423-4833. Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides will return on Friday, and in fact, we will be having, again, a return to the notorious nutcracker Nick Whitehead. He'll be with us again, this time with his show, Home Sweet Homeless, a production he did about 3 years ago and has now tightened up and put into audio form, and that should be quite a treat. So thank you for being with us. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides, signing off.
How do you like it? up at 3 a.m. She turned the TV on. The screen was bright as snow. In the picture, it made her head hurt. She turned the TV on and thought, I'm tired of him. So tired of all his songs. In the pitch dark, she could not sleep. And it's all in my mind, making boss. It's the grind of the cinematic night, running water. And it's all in my head, yes it is, she said. I'm down in the dark, falling water. Ground floor. And it's all in my mind, Nicky Boss. It's the cry of the city at night, falling water. And it's all in my head, yes it is, she said. I'm down in the dark, falling water.
Say, brothers and sisters, is very simple. We need the poor to live amongst us. No matter in whatever way the poor comes, the homeless, the jobless, the panhandlers, welfare clients, the addicted, the physically and emotionally impaired, or challenged. Any attack on one group is an attack on the people of Berkeley. We choose this city to live in. The poor, too, choose to live in Berkeley. We are one with the poor. The poor is one with us. We are one, we are Berkeley. The poor is the mirror of the non-poor. The poor tell the rest of us what we are like and how we are like. When the eyes of the poor lock on to the eyes of the non-poor, this can evoke fear, anger, denial, guilt, shame, hatred. Rather than accept their truth, that we are fearful, angry, hateful, guilty, spiteful, we prefer to remove these reminders of the kind of soul that is ours. Or we can welcome the truth, listen to their truth, become one with them, rather than stand against and deny our otherness. Some merchants, with some churches, with some politicians, propose anti-poor laws. The first step in architecting Berkeley downtown into a roofless mall, involving only the money. As a consequence, the moneyless will be forced to leave, and our men will be greed, avarice, and consumptive. Our souls will wither up and dry. no spiritual exercise that the poor constantly challenge us to. And Berkeley downtown will become just like another section of the El Camino Real Highway 101, where there are just businesses.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
And I've lived in Berkeley for, since 1967. And I've been very active in Berkeley affairs. I've been the chair of the Health Advisory Commission. I've been on the Housing Advisory Board. And I've done a lot of things. But I am appalled at what's happening now with the City Council and with some of the people in Berkeley. I think that there's a grip of fear in the hands and in the minds of people in Berkeley who are afraid of anything that might possibly offend them. And I think it's being perpetrated by the politicians who want to create a state of fear. Now, for many, many years, I go way back. I go back to the 30s when I started my activity. I'm going to be 85, you know. And I go way back. And in the depths of the Depression, we never had this kind of fear that exists today, not only in the country, but right here in Berkeley. And it's just a shame. You know, I have a feeling that sometime or another, we're going to go way, way back in history so that homeowners up there where I live in Shirley Dean's district, and she's creating a state of fear. I think what's going to happen is that they're going to start building moats around their houses with drawbridges. Unless we can really create a political atmosphere, and all of this has to be done politically, you have to politically tell people that we cannot exist in this country with a state of poverty, with a state of homelessness, with a state of unemployment, with a state of poor health. We have to change not only these things, we have to change the system so that we will be able to have the things that we need.